What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Yeah, here we are.
Here we are. So there's your Christmas tree behind you.
Well, that's one and there's two.
Oh, wow.
You have two Christmas trees?
I got two Christmas trees, yeah.
What?
Little dream.
The back of me has the train going around it, and it's white lights. I'm not a big fan of white lights. I like colored. But I got so many ornaments that I had to get another tree.
Yeah, so one is the white light tree that you don't like, and the other one is for you specifically.
Yeah, but I love my ornaments. I'm a big Santa collector.
Oh, I saw a table full of Santa ornaments. So you have like a separate table of ornaments as well.
That's just a small table. I have no idea what I had, but it's got to be over 1,000 Santas.
That's a fuck ton of Santas, Joe.
I yeah,
love
I
it. Pod. 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 Podcast. Hi, I'm Matt Lieb.
And I'm Vince Mancini.
And this is Pod Yourself a Gun. A Sopranos podcast where Vince Mancini and I go through every single episode of The Sopranos and talk about it. Thank you all so much for tuning in to this very special episode of Pod Yourself a Gun. For the first time in the history of this podcast, we have an actual cast member from The Sopranos on the show. That's right.
It only took us six seasons. Amazing.
It only took us hours and hours of our life, countless Sopranos songs in order to get someone who's actually been on the show to notice. Today, our guest, you know him, of course, as Gino, the guy who bought some stuff at the bakery that one time. Also, as Vito Spadafore, ladies and gentlemen, Joe Ganascoli is here. How you doing, Joe?
Matt, Vince, how are you? What a pleasure. I'm so glad I made it happen.
Yeah, you did.
Yeah. You did the legwork. We did nothing, but we have an email address, so that's something.
Yeah, yeah.
That's,
yeah.
True. That's true.
So somehow our podcast, caught your eye, and you said, what is this? A Sopranos podcast? The only Sopranos podcast in existence? I should reach out and say hi. So is that how it went down?
Almost, just like that. I can't tell you how many podcasts I get asked to do, and I don't do them.
No.
And there was another one by cast members that seemed to be pretty popular, but I didn't do that. I wouldn't do it. I refused.
And you decided this one instead.
I decided to do this, and I don't know why. It just caught my eye, and there we are. So
we'll take it,
dude. That feels good for us. I mean, here's the thing: we've been telling all of our listeners that this is the only Sopranos podcast. So as far as our listeners know, there is no other podcast out there about the Sopranos in existence. You know,
yeah.
So
I'm sure. You know, most of them are living under a rock, and they probably don't know of any other.
Oh, so for sure.
I'm with you.
Yeah, most of our listeners do not go outside. Thank you for coming on. We just wanted to, ask you some questions about The Sopranos, being that this is the first time we've had a cast member on. The first the first question that I always ask every guest of this podcast is, are you a fan of The Sopranos?
The show?
Yeah.
Yeah, I became a fan. I don't watch it now like so many people do watch. You know, people email me and direct message me all the time that they're rewatching it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't for several reasons. But when it was on, I watched it like millions of others.
Oh, nice.
Is it hard to see like an older version of yourself, or is it just more?
Two reasons. One is, well, maybe three. I don't like seeing Jimmy, you know, sure. on the screen. And my hips, that walk, brings back painful memories.
Mm.
And as soon as they killed me, I had my double hip replacement done.
So that's interesting. So you actually, in the show, you said multiple times as Vito, I was supposed to have hip surgery. This is something you actually said in the episode Mo and Joe when you're like taking a siesta.
Right. And I think that's the only time we refer to the hips, I think.
Yeah. So that's a real thing. You actually had to have hip surgery.
Yes. And, you know, many times when something was happening in your private life, they would incorporate it into the show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So did you end up delaying that like for like the shooting schedule or anything like that, or was it?
Yeah, because I didn't know how long it'd take me to recover.
Mm-hmm.
I actually could have done it during the season. I didn't know how long it would take me to recover, and I wound up recovering pretty much like in a month.
Hmm. So are the hips good now?
Well, that happened in maybe 06.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I play golf almost every morning, and I walk the course.
Oh, nice.
And yeah, and I carry my clubs, and I couldn't take a step without unbelievable pain.
Mm-hmm.
So compared to that and now where I am, it was the best move ever.
You mentioned Jim Gandolfini, and one thing I never have seen him in real life, and just like in the show, I've sort of noticed that he has these giant like catcher's mitts for hands.
Yeah.
Like, was he just a large guy? What was he? What was his presence like in person?
He was just a, you know, a big bear of a guy, 6'3". I don't know what his weight was. I venture to say 240, 260 maybe. Not even sure. He was pretty much in shape. He was just a big man, you know?
Yeah, he's always an intimidating presence on the show. It's one of those things where the way every scene he does opposite anyone, he always seems to tower over them, and then also just like have this like, I don't know, very intimidating presence. Was working with him the same way, or like when the camera was off, was he just he seems like he might have been a gentle giant.
He was very I don't know, low key. You know, he didn't come off as imposing. When you know, he was funny, he was affable. He didn't come over that sort of intimidating off camera. Hanging out with him, you know, but he did have that. I'm curious to know that now that you bring that up, who was like sort of that same kind of, you know, I guess maybe even some bodyguards, but probably smaller than him. Mm. I know they had Tony Siragusa on. He used to play for the Ravens. He was a big guy, but not many were in as big as Jimmy in stature.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you talked about them incorporating real life things with the actors into the show, but the whole Vito arc where he's gay, that was your idea, right? Like, was that was something that you'd pitched to David Chase?
Mm. So I was obviously covered. I was, you know, Gino the first season.
Yeah.
Right.
I had the good fortune of them bringing me back as Vito. Why, I don't know, but forever grateful. I got to kill Jackie Jr. at the end of season 3, which was great.
You did. That was awesome. That was, you know, someone had to do it, and I was glad it was Vito.
That was a big moment. And all the guys loved it. You know, all the girls hated it.
Oh, sure.
And, you know, as an actor, you're always trying to get more work. Hopefully you're in more scenes. You have a chance to, you know, show you can act. Now it's like I'm a self-taught chef, and I was a self-taught actor. And I didn't suggest it to David Chase himself because, you know, I never really interacted with him. But one of the writers were always on set, and probably the writer that wrote that episode. And this time it was, I think Robin Green and Mitch Burgess were writing partners, but they were married together. Mm. They were married to each other.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And you got to do it sort of like on the down low. You don't want to show like, hey, I got this idea and I think it'd be great so I could get more acting and scenes and stuff.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
You don't want to come off like a douchebag.
Right. You don't want to go in there and be like, what if I kill Tony and then now the show's about me?
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's exactly right. So I had to do it on the down low, and I was reading a book called Murder Machine. Mm. And true story about a crew in Brooklyn. I'm from Brooklyn. And one of the characters in it was gay. And I thought that was like, wow. I was like, wow. That's, you know, it's a gay mobster. And I said, I'm in a mob show. And that'd be kind of interesting. Maybe I'll bring it to their attention and say I'd be willing to do it. Well, it took about 2 years for it to come to fruition. But it changed my life. Thank God they did it. It's not what I had in mind. The way they portrayed it, but I'm glad they did. It made them a little more sympathetic. And, you know, the scene with the security guard, you know, I was on the wrong end of that scene.
Right. So is that how you found out? Like they passed out the script and then all of a sudden read that scene?
I tell you, it's always for some, well, I know the reason they stopped giving the scripts to the actors. one of the actors got a little tipsy, so to speak, left the script in a cab, and they freaked out because everything was highly secretive.
Sure.
So they just gave us our sides. You know, I'm sure Jimmy and Edie got their scripts.
Mm-hmm.
But they just gave us our sides, the one that were in the scenes. And the crew got the scripts because they had to prepare for it, you know, hair, makeup, props, so on and so forth, costume. So we all had our little moles, and we'd ask them, hey, what's going on next episode? Am I in it? I have some good stuff. And my guy would say, no, you know, you're in it. You're not in it. Oh, you got some good stuff. Oh, you got some good scenes. No, you're not getting killed. So one time I asked him, I said, what's going on? He goes, oh, you got some good stuff going on. You're in it. Do I get killed? No, you don't get killed. I said, oh, good. Oh, can't wait to read it. He goes, oh, but by the way, you're going to be blowing a guy. So I go, are you fucking kidding me? I go, what? Because now I'm thinking, one, holy shit, they're doing it. And two is, my fucking friends are going to torture me in Brooklyn.
Yeah.
So sure enough, I get to the, once I knew it was true, I get the sides, and sure enough, I am. I get to the studio for the read-through, and everybody's waiting downstairs. And Sirico, Paulie Walnut, says, hey, you know my friend Joe the Cocksucker? And Stevie Van Zandt says, Joe, they're going to break your balls in the neighborhood. And Jimmy took me aside and says, listen, you're not comfortable with this. We don't have to do it. We'll go talk to David. So I said, you know, I'm kind of asked for it. Not what I had in mind, but as long as they don't treat it like the Russian, you know, I'm okay. And so they said, look, we're not going to do that scene, nothing else on it, but next year is going to be a big year for you. So that's how that all came about.
Wow.
So when So later, like when you actually, you know, when, like towards this arc that we've been talking about in these latest episodes, like when you're actually in a relationship with this guy, like did they audition different guys for the firefighter role, or was that just like
so John Costello, as you know, passed.
Yeah,
may he rest in peace. He was he was a well-known New York actor. He's a firefighter. I actually knew him through a friend, a mutual friend, and we actually worked together on something small. And he was really respected. And I figured that Georgia and Walken, and even Sheila Jaffe would know him because they knew the New York actors. So when I walked in, they told me that lunch, we want you to come upstairs and read with who's going to be, you know, whoever it is. I was relieved to see it was John Costello. It was someone I knew. So it wasn't sort of awkward and stuff, you know?
Yeah.
I will say that there was one scene when we were rolling around in the hay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What, the bikes? And I said, Johnny, you got to do something with the fucking mustache because it's going in my mouth and I'm going to vomit. So hair and makeup fixed that. They try to fucking brush it up as much as they could. I said, just let's fucking do this and let's get it over with.
did you tell them like you have to like shampoo it or something? Because I can taste last night's dinner on this and it's just too much.
It had a funky taste to it, I'll tell you that.
So did you end up getting as much shit from the guys in your neighborhood as you imagined that you would, like after these episodes aired?
Well, you know, guys in Brooklyn, just like, you know, the Sopranos, just like Italians in the neighborhood, they like to break balls.
Sure.
You know, if I had a fucking argument with somebody, they'd say, well, what are you going to do now, blow me? but for the most part, they knew it was acting.
Sure.
And I had some real guys in the neighborhood. I know real guys. And they started giving me dirty looks, you know, when I was in a club or a restaurant. I was like, what the fuck is up with them? They go, oh, you know, the part, they don't like what you fucking, you know, the part you're playing. I go, the fuck, it's acting.
It's a fucking TV show.
Yeah, I mean, they go, yeah, but they don't like it. And I go, ah, what the fuck they want me to do? So, you know, it is what it is. And so, you know, those are the guys that are knuckleheads. But they were real guys. And, yeah, they broke balls for a while for the most part.
Yeah,
it was all right. It was good fun.
I think that's something that the Sopranos does really well is showing the homophobia that surrounded, I think, a lot of the people in this like particular culture where everyone has, they're so homophobic that even the portrayal of a gay man on TV, they're like, I don't like it. I just don't. I don't agree with this. And it's like, that's.
Yeah. Well, sometimes if it really bothers them, I think they're like, maybe, you know, I'm not fucking Freud here, but
yeah,
you know, and I think they're like, so I think they got like, you know, they're on the fence. Now, as far as me, I mean, I was in the restaurant business. I lived in New Orleans.
Oh, sure.
You know, I worked in a gay restaurant. I worked in Manhattan restaurants. If you have a problem with gays, you shouldn't be in the restaurant business.
Yeah.
So I'm the type of guy, live and let live, you know, as long as it doesn't interfere with me. And, You know, I don't even mind you even coming off to me.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm straight, so we're good. I worked in a gay restaurant that was owned by gays, frequented by gays. And me and this kid Danny from the Bronx were the only two straight guys in the kitchen. And we used to tell him, hey, just, you know, the waiters, bring all the girls back here because, you know, we want to meet them. And they would be like, oh, that's Danny, that's Joe. And I was like, you know, I was young. I was in shape and, you know, and they were always flirting with us. But although they had all those girls that, you know, worked with haircutters and fashion and so on. This restaurant, it was a happening place. And we were fucking making out like bandits. It was beautiful.
Yeah.
But Yeah, I didn't forget what the question was, but yeah, so I never had a problem with the whole thing.
Yeah. So, like, in this episode, you actually, this is the episode that we're discussing this week, is the one where you actually make Johnny Cakes a nice dinner. And I think you made him some pasta padan and some pork chops with the vinegar peppers. I was curious if you had any like input into the menu choices of the food that they chose to show you making on this.
You know, during the course, I think earlier my cookbook novel had come out. They knew I had a restaurant. They knew I was a chef. You think they would have like, you know, like, hey, what do you know? Even my knife skills that I had to show off to the director, where they got a close up. I think I'm slicing mushrooms or something.
Yeah, you're cutting an onion there.
Cutting an onion. I go, you know, I was a chef. I mean, should be. I know how to saute. I know how to flip the food. I mean, get on it because you don't need a double. I'm doing it. It's me. They didn't really ask. And so we showed a little, but no, they didn't ask me about the food. I wasn't even sure what pasta padan was. You know, pasta with potatoes, which is a real peasant dish, and pork chop and vinegar peppers is well known. Not something I ate at home, either of those dishes. But people always ask them about them. And, you know, when I do my cooking jobs, I should probably even incorporate that. I never even thought about it, but nobody asks, why don't you make the pork chops with vinegar peppers? My stuff's a little more elite. Or upscale than that. So
you said you were going to make dinner for your daughter later today. What are you making tonight?
I don't do anything. She, you know, like any, she's 12 years old.
Oh,
so yeah. You know, what do they like to eat? You know, the same thing. It's mac cheese. I am, you know, making a taco. I'm not even a big fan of tacos, but you know, something not too heavy because she's got dance. She doesn't really, you know, I wanted to try new things, but, you know, I don't want it to be obsessed with food. Oops, sorry. Yeah. So, listen, she eats sushi, so that's a stop.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's good.
Yeah, I got an 8-year-old stepson. He loves sushi. It's an expensive thing for kids to be into, but they seem to like it.
I go to the buffet.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, nice.
So I read that like when you, part of the reason that you got into acting after being a chef was that you lost money on a football game, like that you were gambling on.
Yeah, I was a degenerate gambler back in the day. I was in a restaurant. I was making a lot of money, and you know, I'm a huge sports fan, so. You think you know sports, you can figure it out. You can tell who's going to win or lose. You know, and you can't. And this is back in 1990. And you didn't have the access to games like you do. So if you want to bet the game, you bet the ones that are on TV, Giants, Jets, and Sunday Night Football. And Giants were going to the Super Bowl, and of course, they're resting their starters, and it was a big line. And of course, they took the Giants. They got creamed. Then I took, I don't know, it was a Jet, somebody, and I don't know. I had the losing game, and I was betting big money. And the Sunday night game, he tried to get even, and I got buried. And 3 days later, I was in LA. I cashed out, paid my debts, and moved to LA.
So, like, before you moved to LA, was there someone in your life that said, like, hey, maybe you should try acting, or was that something that you'd wanted to do?
Yeah, no, it's not something I always wanted to do. I wasn't infatuated with movies. The usual, you know, Godfather. For me, Raging Bull was, I used to watch it constantly.
Yeah.
That was my movie. I was working in a restaurant in Manhattan. I must have been 26, 27. A waiter that had started a theater company said, we're doing a play very off Broadway. If you'd be right for a role, do you want to come audition for it? And I did, and I got it, and I liked it. And I said, you know, what do I do now? He goes, why don't you go study with my teacher? I did that for about a year and a half, and I didn't really get much out of what he was teaching. But I was infatuated with him because he was so off the wall in the way he taught. I enjoyed watching him teach. But not really what he was teaching. I lasted about a year and a half because he throws everybody out of the class, takes them back. But he was really well respected. And so I did that for a year and a half. And then I got back into restaurant business. When I lost all that money, I called up my friend, Tim. His name is Tim Calero. He's a working actor. I said, Tim, and he was very religious and is almost going to become a priest. It's almost like Scorsese, who wanted to become a priest also. And I said, Tim, this is what happened. He goes, listen, I'm house sitting in Hollywood Hills. Come, and we'll be roommates. And I did that. And so when I got there, I was like, wow, I'm in the hills. Look at his house, producer's house. He said, don't get used to it. It's going to last 2 weeks. And we were out trying to find another place after that. But I lasted 3.5 years in L.A.
I mean, the idea of trying to get work as an actor in order to pay off a gambling debt, it kind of sounds like, yeah, I'm going to buy this lottery ticket to try right. and pay off. Like usually the acting seems like a long shot of a thing to make money. Yeah.
Like an almost harder gamble.
Yeah, no, I didn't. But I didn't do that. I paid off my debt because I had investment in the restaurant. So I cashed out with my partners and I paid my bookie.
Got it.
Nice.
Yeah. I might as well just drop off the face of the earth. And but I always paid my debts. I wasn't going to be one of those guys. Yeah, so I paid my debt. I told my partners the next day, Monday, paid them off Tuesday, and Thursday I was in L.A.
So since you were someone who was like familiar with the world of, you know, gambling and whatnot, and you're someone who grew up in Brooklyn, does that mean, did you actually have run-ins with a lot of these like mafioso characters? Like, were you able to look at The Sopranos and go like, oh, this is true to the people I knew, or kind of an exaggeration?
No, I it was true in a lot of ways. Like I said, I grew up in Brooklyn. I know real guys. I'm talking about, like, you know, sons of heads of families. And,
right.
You know, the real five families and who they're with. And you know, you read about them. And you know about them. And you know how it works. Not that I was around, you know, killings and stuff like that.
Oh, sure.
But guys, I know these loan sharks and there's Shylocks. There's guys that, are made, and guys that are connected, guys that want to be, you know, guys that, you know, caught beatings or even killed for messing with someone's daughter or wife. I mean, that happened growing up.
Yeah.
You know? I think that it was pretty much on the money.
Yeah.
I think it was pretty much on the money. And certainly the lines. I mean, sometimes I've read so many things that people have said I'm doing a mob thing. And I go, nobody talks like that. Yeah. Nobody says capiche. You know? You know, if anything, you say the slang or magabe, something like that. Nobody says, you know, the dialogue is, and that's what was so great about Sopranos. It's always about the written word. And
yeah.
And so, and everybody has their favorite lines, and
right. No, nobody actually goes around saying that's a spicy meatball. That's just not.
Yeah.
That's just not something that the mafia says.
Yeah, exactly. So, they didn't go with the old contrived dialogue.
Yeah, cliches. Yeah.
Cliches, and you know, that's what made it so beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you talked about the secrecy of the scripts and them trying to keep those under wraps. Was there like a lot of trepidation among the cast, like when you'd get the new scripts? Like, were people always sort of worried about their characters getting killed off and losing out on the future paydays?
Well, 100%. That was everybody's biggest fear. I mean, you're in a mob show. You know, what's a mob show without guys getting killed? So it wouldn't happen to the regular. You know, it was going to be someone at the end of the year It was pussy. It was, you know, Jackie Jr. I guess that was the big hit. Richie Aprile got it.
Ralphie.
Yeah. I mean, Joe Pantoliano is very established. He's well known. He'll always work. Yeah. So,
were you ever around any of the actors when they found out that their character was getting killed off?
No, I think that David Minor called them in and told them, depending on the actor. I know when I found out, I went in and talked to him. You know, I was trying to get to season 6,
yeah,
second part. And I said what I had to say, and, you know, what's, you know, expected, and it'd be great if, you know, he could live and still learn. And Tony's, you know, evolved, and, you know, he live and let live. And let me speak for about 5 minutes. And then when I was done, he said, "You're going." And I said, "Okay, thank you."
Man.
Yeah.
Has anyone ever successfully talked themselves out of getting script whacked?
I don't know. I don't know. I mean, you know, I think that was once it was set.
Sure.
And, you know, because in his mind, he's got to, you know, a way things are going to happen and fall into place.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One thing that we have sort of noticed or maybe suspected about David Chase in the course of making the show is that he seems to really like fat jokes, and like even to the point of like you wonder whether certain people were like cast so specifically so that he could like write more fat jokes into the script. And then you ended up losing a bunch of weight towards the later seasons. Did you ever like when you're reading scripts and there's like fat jokes about your character, did you ever like get your feelings hurt, or was that ever like a thing?
Yeah, it bothered me. It definitely bothered me. Now that I think about it, maybe that's why he kept me around. I wanted it. You know, I mean, that's a fucking good point. I never fucking thought about it. Good job there, Vince.
Yeah,
as far as breaking the chair, that was one.
I mean, Jenny Sack is like that. That was like a whole arc about her being fat.
Yeah.
Bobby,
I mean, being forced to do Santa Claus.
When that you start thinking about salads, or you think about a salad.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when they're both standing by the car.
Yeah.
That was a fat suit he was wearing. Yeah, because that stomach was huge. I think about it. That's a good point. I wonder. You'd bothered me because, I mean, I was always, I was in shape. I mean, I had pictures when I was younger with my wife, and I was in shape kind of guy, and I took pride on that. And then when I became a chef, stopped going to the gym and started eating like an animal, drinking. I mean, that's the lifestyle for me anyway. Gambling. I was living like a real animal. So, it just went all downhill after that.
Towards like the end of the show, I read that Jim Gandolfini and David Chase would sort of like they started to have more of an adversarial relationship, and they would get in fights, and they sort of had to like take a break after the show was over. Did you ever like witness did any of those kind of conflicts ever happen like on the set while you were around?
No, a couple of times, you know. Jimmy was supposed to be there and he didn't show up. But I think that the pressure of the show, carrying the show, for the most part, I mean, Edie was in it a lot, but it was Jimmy. And I think that got to him after a while, you know? Mm-hmm. So I never saw them. I'm sure it was in private, maybe in his trailer. Mm. Maybe in the office, maybe privately. I never witnessed anything.
Mm-hmm.
Dave? Anyone say hello? My new pals?
Hey! Who are we about to talk to?
That's Viviana. Say hello right there.
Hi. Hey, Viviana. Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you, too.
So... Who was like on the set, you mentioned Tony Sirico. Who was like the who are the biggest ball busters? Sorry, who are the biggest ball busters on the set among the actors?
Sirico was definitely. Mm. Ralphie could be Joe Pigliano. Yeah, Vincent, maybe.
Yeah.
Do you ever see the group shot of us in front of Satch Reals?
Oh, yeah.
Everyone's in it except Walnuts. He wasn't working that day. I think it was the Columbus Day parade.
Mm-hmm.
The Columbus Day. Where Furio's got the thing hates Columbus.
Yeah.
Right, yeah.
So there's the scene where Bacalao's reading from the newspaper.
Mm-hmm.
And he's having a hard time, and he keeps messing it up, his lines. And Pagliano was laughing and wouldn't stop laughing, which made him even more conscientious. And he was getting really pissed. So you could see in that photo that Steve has got his mug on because he's still pissed at Pagliano. And every time I see that picture, I think about that. And it's pretty funny. You know, but listen, we all been there. And I remember doing a scene where Sylvia was in the acting as the acting boss, and he was on the toilet reading the paper. And I have a problem with Walnuts because I gave him this job, and he said I thought there was going to be 300,000 there.
Yeah.
And got hit in the nuts. And he's limping. And so we got to give money to maybe Edie. Yeah.
To Carmella. Yeah.
So I walk into the bathroom and he already starts. He goes, lady room's next door.
Yeah.
And then I said, I could reach her from here. And he goes, I was like, bedlam over here. He had no idea what went through and tell me the story. And I'm like, yeah. So give me my, I want my cut, 150,000, I think. He goes, what? You're lucky if there was what? And I go, hey, Paulie, I cased it myself. So, and this is where I couldn't stop laughing. And he goes, have a donut, you're delirious. And then I start to make a move on him toward him. And he tells me, back up, Bluto. And those lines, for some reason, I just couldn't stop laughing. And they had a cold break. We tried it about 5, 6, 7 times.
Yeah.
But he just it's just one of those things where you just can't stop. So that's all of us trying to remember lines and so on and so forth.
Sure. Was there anyone like that you would say was like the biggest like pain in the ass on set? Like who was either always fucking trying to fuck stuff up or trying to throw anyone off or?
No, we were all really worked with each other. We all had each other's back. We know that we were working on something great.
Mm.
And we all tried to do our best and help each other. I mean, once in a while, you know, if things happen, you get like, you know, you're having a little fun. But for the most part, it wasn't like that. You know, it's like all for one and one for all, I guess.
Yeah.
Were there any like scenes that stand out as ones that were like the toughest to shoot or were like a tough day on set for any reason?
Kind of been long days, hot days. The church scene. I think it's Johnny Sack's daughter.
Yeah, the wedding.
It was a brutal, brutal, brutal hot day. There's no air conditioning. You're in a suit trying to stay cool. It was crowded. Everybody was in the church. That was a rough day. You're just glad it's over. That stood out to me, I think.
Is it like, are you able to sort of gauge how popular like The Sopranos is at any given moment based on like how much you get recognized or that people come up to you when you're out in public?
You know, it's kind of worldwide. Mm-hmm. I mean, not that I travel the world, but I know there's fans from all over.
Yeah.
Back during maybe 05, 06, in between seasons, I was down in Athens, Georgia at some drag racing event that I was doing something with. and there were fans, and I never would expect, you know, down deep in the South, you know. But I haven't run into any Bushmen
that fans.
I can't say I ran into any of those or any sort of pygmies.
Yeah, well, at some point you'll run into a pygmy who's seen you and be like, "Hey, it's Gino from the from the bakery."
Yeah, maybe you can pitch that travel show.
Just in terms of like some Sopranos lore, because it's like there's a lot of open ended questions that that happen on the Sopranos. One of them is a theory about Phil Leotardo.
Right.
Which I'm not sure if this is something that has just been brought up recently or this is something that was like going around at the time of filming. But the theory is that he is was a closeted gay character.
In the show?
In the show, yeah. Have you heard that?
Well, I do call him a metrosexual.
Uh-huh.
Right?
Yeah,
which I don't even know what that was, and then and then the whole thing when he comes to kill me, he comes out of the closet.
He does come out of the closet, yeah,
right.
But was is that something at the time that was discussed that like he was that he was doing the murder, that he was murdering you because he had some sort of you know, like closeted you know, gay tendencies, or is there nothing to that?
You know, it might have been an inside thing that only David knows.
Mm.
You know, he sort of like grips the bed when I'm getting, you know, pummeled.
Right.
And that might have been like a turn on to him. Who knows?
Yeah, that's possible.
You know, so that was a possibility.
What?
But I never really heard.
Mm.
What was Frank Vincent like? Cause he was like an insult comic with like Joe Pesci. Didn't they have like a stand-up act back in like the '60s together?
Well, they had
like
a band. They had a band.
Okay.
Oh, wow.
So I think, Pesci was a drummer or Frank was a drummer and one of them was a singer, you know?
Yeah. I think Pesci was a singer.
Pesci was a singer. So they had a band. So they went way back. Sorry if I'm, all over my camera.
Oh, that's fine.
Yeah, I'm trying to cook one-handed.
Sorry.
Because
she's got to eat. So, what was it like working with Frank Vincent? Is he's,
you know, I didn't have many scenes with him. I didn't have a lot of scenes with him. You know, we had. I'm talking in the. I don't know whose house, and you know, what can I get you? You know, just a little. Hot water or warm water with lemon.
Yeah, right.
People love that line. You know, I know at the wedding we were at the same table. Mm-hmm. I was doing Raging Bull lines for them because, like I said, it was one of my favorite movies.
Sure.
I was putting tissues in my mouth. And I was doing the Robert De Niro, "Hey, Ray, you never got me down, Ray. Never went down." Yeah, so that was a treat for me to do that for him.
I wonder how many times in his life that guy's heard, "Hey, you fuck my wife? You fuck my wife?"
No, well, that's De Niro to Pesci.
Right. Yeah,
right. No, for Frank Vincent, it's got to be "Get your fucking shine box."
Yeah,
he's probably heard that his entire life.
Right. Yeah. Another guy. Rest in peace.
Yeah. Do you have any stories about like meeting fans and about how they've reacted to your character in the portrayal? Because you know, at the time that the episode came out or that your season arc came out, it was kind of it was a big deal. I mean, people hadn't seen that real of a portrayal of like homosexuality and someone having to like go into hiding because of it. Did you get any feedback?
Yeah, it was groundbreaking. You never saw it, right? Back then. And I don't think I was married yet.
Mm.
So, and I got married late. And I said, let me get married. I better get married quick here because people can really think that I'm gay. So it was a rush job. by the way, I'm going to show you something.
Mm.
See this. See that picture?
Oh, wow.
Have you seen that?
Oh, wow. Yeah. I don't know if I've seen that one.
Yeah, me neither.
That's my wedding.
Oh, beautiful.
Yeah.
And you're still happily married to the same woman?
Still married to the same woman, happily. Well, you know, we have our moments. I'm not the easiest guy. I'll be honest. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, of course.
So in the episode where they discover that Vito's gay at the leather bar, like what did you think? Do you remember what you were thinking the first time they like came in and showed you the wardrobe that you were gonna have for that?
I had to go up for a fitting, and I said, "I'm wearing that." They said, "Yeah," and I said, "I'm not doing this without dungarees on." I said, nobody wants to see me in assless chaps. Yeah, so, and everybody was. And those people in that scene were real guys that they went out and got from the West Village or the East Village or
one of the villages. Yeah.
So that was interesting. And
Did you improvise that move where you're doing kind of like a cowboy with a lasso? Or
Yeah. I don't know how to dance. And, you know, I'm very happy that I have my own gift. You know, when someone's happy, they got a raise, they send them that gift.
Yeah, that's a great gift.
Yeah, and that was a move, like, you know, I didn't know what to do, so I did the old lasso move. And
it's a great move. It's iconic.
And I think it was Buscemi directing, or maybe Terry Winters. They said, this is the last take. Do what you want to do. And I don't know if they were implying, but I gave him a kiss just because I said, let me just go for it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, and he was a real guy. He was a personal shopper at Barney's.
That's right. I forgot that was a job that existed back then, the personal shop. Now it's all on an app.
Yeah.
But still
personal shop.
That was a pivotal moment, as they say.
Oh, sure.
Was there ever anything that you shot that you remember enjoying that, like, didn't make it into the show?
I think there's a deleted scene on YouTube. I'm in a gazebo on the water, maybe talking to my kids. No, I was talking to Todd. I forget. I had a deleted scene that wound up on YouTube. Mm. I don't know how it wound up there. But, not really.
Okay. And,
I'm just, hold on 1 second. I'm just going to call my daughter.
Oh, sure.
Do you get sour cream with that? I don't know. There's guac and salsa. Got to like make it yourself. Is that all right? Like that? How's that look, guys? Pretty good, right?
That looks great.
I'm sorry. So did you ask me?
Oh, I have another question for you with regards to Finn DeTrolio.
Yeah.
My
arch nemesis.
Yeah, your arch nemesis.
By the way, that scene when he comes out of the porta potty is my favorite scene.
Oh, is that your favorite scene?
Yeah.
Because I did that in two takes.
Yeah.
And I just enjoyed that so much doing that. And I just love the way that whole thing unfolded.
Do you keep in touch with the actor who played Finn at all?
No.
Oh no.
No. The only actor I really keep in touch with is Gigi. Who played Gigi? John Fiore.
Oh, okay. Nice.
Yeah.
Is Gigi the one who
died on the toilet bowl.
Died on the toilet. Yeah, that's what I thought. Yeah.
Capo de Crapo, we call them.
Yeah. We've talked about his death quite extensively on the podcast, mostly in just like the idea that he would get his sides and find out that he's dying on the toilet.
Yeah.
What? I mean, did he share with you his thoughts about that?
He wasn't happy. Because he only lasted 3 episodes as a captain.
Right.
So, he wasn't happy about that, and he wished he would have had a longer run. He's a tremendous actor. I like John a lot. We have a lot of fun. He's from Boston. He had a great sense of humor.
Yeah.
Yeah, he got that whole episode where you really like got into the background of that character, and it got you really invested in that character. And then at the end of the episode, it's like, oh, yeah, he just died on the shitter. They pulled the old smash cut to funeral move, which always cracks me up, but it's got to be suck if you're that actor.
Yeah.
Vince, do you want? Do you have any questions to wrap up the interview?
I think I got all my questions that I wanted to ask out of the way there.
You had a lot of questions. I got to be honest with you.
I'm a curious man. What can I say?
He is.
That's the whole thing about doing an interview. Have questions, and they were good. They were both well thought out, and you know, I've done stuff where some of them haven't even watched the show, so I get it really annoyed. I cut them short, but this was a lot of fun. Hopefully, I had some insight.
Yeah,
and I look at you, Matt, and I every time I look at you, I think of John Turturro.
Yeah,
he looks like
I get that.
He looks like
I get that
John
a lot.
Turturro and John Steinbeck. It's
John Steinbeck again, and actually Alfred Molina a little bit. I don't know why.
See that?
I got a little bit of all of them in me, except for like a Jewish version, you know.
Now,
so I'm like,
what do you do, Matt?
What do I do?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm a comedian, stand up, and then podcasting.
And where do you live in L.A.?
I live in Eagle Rock, near Pasadena.
Oh, yeah. I was in West Hollywood. And what about you, Vince?
I am a writer and cultural critic, and I live in Fresno.
A writer for just writer in general, or writer for tabloid.
I write for a website called UpRocks.
It's like it's like blogs and stuff.
How dare you?
Is it UPROX?
Yeah, two X's, but yeah.
I think I might have been in that. I think they might have wrote about my cooking.
That sounds like it's very possible. I wasn't the writer.
That sounds
one.
Right.
They might have picked up the story, or they did a story on it, as I recall.
Oh yeah, yeah. I just found it. Yeah.
There you go.
There it is. Yep.
Small world.
Small world. So is there any part of you that actually wants to, or is there a reason why you won't do the other Sopranos podcast?
The other one or the others?
Oh, the other one with Steve and Michael.
Well, first of all, it's over.
That's right.
Yeah. Second of all, I had a falling out, one of them. It got nasty. Mm. And then they seemed to have forgotten. And they asked me to come on. I said, I'm thinking to myself, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
So I said, no, I'm not interested. Thanks.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Well, I'm glad you didn't have a falling out with us, because we were very happy to have you on and talk to you about The Sopranos. This is probably our first and only cast member guest that we will have, as we are also nearing the end of our run. But
yeah, I'm honored. I mean, you still have 11 left.
Yeah, still got 11 left. We're almost at the end. So hey, you know, if you know of, you know, anyone else who's like, hey, I want to be interviewed on this Sopranos podcast, we're right here waiting.
Well, I actually was supposed to do I don't know how many people people, you know, say, hey, you want to do a podcast? And it's not even a Soprano one. It's just a podcast in general. I usually say, nah, you know, because, you know, it's how long is it? 15 years now?
Yeah.
You know, how many times are you going to answer the same questions?
Sure.
And I do it, you know, my dinners are two a week, you know, usually.
Oh, wow.
And I'm there 10 hours. And, you know, I tell stories and answer questions. So
sure.
Imagine.
We got to do one of those, Matt. Well, we got to do one.
We definitely got to do one. We got to go to your dinners.
Yeah, well... you got to be invited.
Well, we're just inviting ourselves. That's how it works.
Yeah, we'll just show up.
You know, it's funny. I raffled one off because so many people wanted to do them, and I said that'd be kind of fun. So I did the $75 each, 100 people, and I just got a winner. But for the second prize, I was going to raffle one off, and then the people that win get invited to the person that won. But people were saying, I want strangers in my house.
Right.
So yeah. I said, that's a little funky. Yeah. But it's usually, you know, big fans that want to get it for their husband, their brother, their father, sure. Or just fans in general. I've been to several of them, but they know lines inside and out for 10 hours. These guys are just throwing lines at me. I mean, it's actually pretty funny. So listen, I wish you guys tremendous success.
Yeah.
It's been a lot of fun doing it.
Yeah, and thank you so much for coming on and talking to us about about your time there. Yeah, and we really appreciate
it. Very much
so. My pleasure. Good luck and enjoy the rest of the show. Yeah. And to all your listeners and followers and so on. All
right. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Enjoy your success. I learned that line from The Sopranos, so.
All right. Thank you so much, Joe.
Wait, you know what they said about Vito?
What?
He's great on the piano, but he sucks on the organ. Use it in your act, my friend. That's a gift.
All right. I'll take it. Yeah. I'll take it.
All right. I'll see you.
All right. Take care. Bye.
Bye.
Podcast.